This spotlight is about the crystalline beings. There are many different names for them, and Makatal is one of them, but there are many, many different ways. So I'm not even going to go there. Let's just call them crystals, crystal beings or guardians. What they are matrix of consciousness that is essentially a well-organized, structuralized morphogenic field in the eighth dimension. So for a moment, forget what you know about crystals as a literal thing that's a materialized crystal, and think of it as a consciousness. Crystalline beings are originally a unified consciousness that is a line of the nebula Kadishtu guardians, so they are sort of its own different direction of development of consciousness. Think of it like a group field that is very well organized structurally and created patterns within itself that it can replicate itself on. That field is eighth dimensional, and that's their home in the eighth dimension. When that culture spread throughout the universe, many different galaxies, it eventually went further down into the seventh dimension. When they arrived to seventh dimension, they realized there's such thing as the macro tubular network of the whole universe. So those are the pathways of light that interconnect everything through the stargates. Up to that point, they were spreading more by consciousness and understanding of reality, by just using multi-connectedness sort of the universe and the nebulae anchor points, because nebula are sort of they begin on the other side of reality before they show up on our side as a nebula, which is a nursery for the stars. So all the things we know as stars, out of which come the planets, out of planets come simulations and then things like us, it all begins as a concept with a nebula consciousness beings. So the crystalline consciousness beings are the offshoot of the nebula consciousness. In the eighth dimension, they moved about strictly through the nebula themselves. But in the seventh dimension, they realized that there are pathways through which they can actually go into places that maybe don't have a nebula but have a star. That created a whole different level of development for these species, because their organization became more and more and more organized as it went into density further down, and they started to anchor in some star beings that they made contracts with. So it's sort of like a marriage between them and some of the star beings. That is a very incredible sort of way how the crystalline entities exist within stars. That's when they're different stars, obviously. Some are kind of more what we think of like a ball that has an internal fusion, but there are also some stars that are structured and they grow more on the matrices of themselves with the antimatter from the other side coming through. So those are the types of stars that the crystalline entities work with. Once that happened in the seventh dimension, to my knowledge, they eventually were able to anchor a little bit further down, because some of the stars that they met had planets, and on some of the planets there were possibility of the simulations. So even though the crystals did not anchor on planets anywhere near seventh dimension, but what they did is they sort of created their own version of what we would consider a planet. It's not actually a planet in a traditional sense, because when we think of a planet kind of mechanically, it's the matter that was circulating around the star when the star was formed, and over eons of time, eventually the matter coagulated into something that's like a ball or a planetoid, essentially, on which then different life could maybe exist. But that's a more traditional way of thinking of a planet. But if you think of a planet more as a consciousness entity in space that could be in orbit of something or not, like a floating simulation, that's actually what the crystalline beings have created. So they utilize some of the star components that they've been at, where they wrote themselves into these matrices from the star itself. So from our perspective, physically, it would not look like anything. But if you're looking at it in the seventh dimension, it would look like complex crystalline spirals and straight lines and really complex geometry coming of the star. So the star itself would be small, and then beyond that would be all this thing that we would think of a solar system. Well, that star system will be just essentially filled with the matrices that the crystalline beings are. And some of these stars will sort of solidify, as in have anchor in a sixth dimension. Sixth dimension is part of the subharmonic of a 4, 5, and 6, which means it's somewhat physicalized, right? We have 4 subharmonics, so 1, 2, 3, that's us, that's physicalized. Next subharmonic is 4, 5, 6, also somewhat physicalized. And then when you get to 7, 8, 9, much more of the just energy field than form of any kind, or if there are forms, they're thought projections. And further up, completely no form, complete consciousness projection. So when the crystalline beings went from the 7D star-like environment, when the entire star system was essentially them as consciousness, like we think of a star system as a star and the planet circulating around it, to them it was star as the antimatter being that was something they kind of married, so that they grew in it and grew beyond it to take over a large area of space. But once they did that, at some point the star being will actually complete its pathway and will want to go elsewhere. And when it would leave, it would still leave the matrices of this incredible structure in the seventh dimension that has been created by the crystalline beings. So that's when they figured out how to go further down into 6D, which made them a little bit more physicalized, which created incredible worlds. In our galaxy, we have only one like that, but there are some galaxies that have many, many, many of them. That's essentially used to be star, like X star, that in the solar system in a sense, that now is all a crystalline entity. And it looks like a giant snowflake, but really, really complex and enormous, like bigger than solar system. If you envision our solar system and the Oort cloud that we have around it, which is really large amount of space, it's even bigger than that. And that's just their basic shape. Some are even bigger than that. Within that, they started to grow more material type of what we are familiar with as crystals. So from their perspective, crystalline means structure, repetitive, that has certain programming on which it grows. It usually is actually a spiral, but it's a particular repetitive matrices. And onto that goes their fluid energy. They're not just structural, they're structural and fluid. And the fluid energy is this pure love frequency that the nebula beings have that is wrapped around all that structure that then fuels the structure to grow further. So in a more physicalized sense, that looks like a world, I guess we can call it, because it's not a star, it's not a planet, it's a simulation, a world, that has no gravity almost at all, the way we perceive it. Or if it does, it has more on the outside than the inside. And from the center grows different structures. In the seventh dimension, the entire space is filled with them. But in the sixth dimension, it actually looks like clusters of crystals. And they go for, like, from our perspective, would be not even miles long, but like, I don't know, trillions of miles long, because there's no gravity, there's nothing to break them, there's nothing to cause pressure on them. So they just keep going. It's an incredible thing. If you imagine our solar system three times bigger, all from the sun would be crystals just going everywhere. So the center part, of course, everything is interconnected. So crystals kind of grow almost into another, and they have different frequencies as well, so they have different colors. So the whole thing looks really, really, really beautiful. And they make sound. Their form of communication is actually through sound. They resonate. So it's kind of it's an incredible thing, because you would know where that type of simulation, that's a crystalline entity anchor world that exists, because you would hear it from really far away, because that's how it speaks with the universe. It has different vibrations that it constantly sends into space. So if you can imagine that, it's absolutely incredible consciousness to connect to, and its form looks like the crystal. So once they did that, they never went further than sixth dimension in their form. Then they started to utilize their consciousness to go a little bit further, but without sort of incarnating all the way through. Sort of like bringing the matrix of their own creation, like the parameters of how they grow, and then seeding that by agreement with different worlds. That's how we have chemicals that form themselves together into a structure that is repetitive. even rocks to some extent, but crystals are more complex structure. So that is actually a program that was originally part of the body of the crystalline entities. So when we here have different stones, different crystals, and we resonate with them, we are interacting with the matrix, the structure that is sort of an echo of the actual beings, even though they are not inside our crystals, of course. But if we are resonating those crystals and we're really tuning into the frequency of what made the crystal, like the consciousness of the crystal, may it be amethyst or citrine or whatever, doesn't matter which stone, but you're tuning into not the rock itself, but the higher component of it, the higher note. Every crystal has two notes. One is the physicalized and one is the sort of a soul frequency of the crystal. And that soul frequency is linked directly to the guardian of that stone. The term guardian is more of a human term based on many human cultures, but think of it like the soul of that crystal or the guardian of that crystal is not directly this crystal, but this type, like all citrine or all amethyst out there in the world. So that overall soul, the overall frequency of the crystal is linked to the crystalline entity, even if that entity is on the other side of the galaxy, because of the way that they resonate. So when you're actually making a vibratory sound, which could be audible or not, with a crystal, like let's say setting intention on a crystal and really resonating with the soul of that crystal here on Earth in a material form, you are resonating in a way that that crystalline entity somewhere else can actually hear whatever that entity is that burst the amethyst, for example. And it will resonate with it. That's why it works a lot to set the intention on crystals, because not only did the matrix remember and hold the intention for us, but because the entity itself can actually answer and come through that particular crystal. So how does all of that relate to habits, since this is what we're looking at this month? Sovereignty and habits. Well, sovereignty is sort of self-explanatory, right? Because crystals have such a clear structures and clear boundaries that you're not gonna know, like, oh, this crystal ends here, but I don't know, I'm not sure where it ends. Like, you're gonna know. It has very clear parameters, right? So sovereignty and crystalline structures make sense. Habits, though, that's about the matrix of the crystal. It's about how the crystal grows. So crystals have a particular program. Once that program is created, it just repetitively goes. It actually goes in a spiral, sort of like this. It builds on itself. That's how the crystal grows. So when we program our intention onto it, it helps us habituate the intention. Same thing could be done with breaking the intention. If you add a negative intention into a crystal, like let's say your habit that is not beneficial, and then you bring the positive into it, those two will have a trouble with one another, right? Because one is a replacement for another. They cannot coexist. You cannot have a beneficial habit and not beneficial about the same thing. So by putting them together into the crystal, the beneficial one would be of a higher frequency, which means it will reprogram, reset the crystal to essentially erase the incorrect, non-beneficial program. That is a way that if we're choosing to use that mechanism consciously, we can work with the crystal to do that. So if you literally have a crystal, you can hold it in your field and work with the frequency of your negative habit so that the crystal understands what your habit is. Then bring the frequency of your positive habit, the more higher frequency event. And now watch what happens. Listen to how this crystal is changing. If you're able to hear frequencies, you would probably hear the note is literally changing from a disharmonious to harmonious. That's a different resonance. So then once the process is complete, it would feel more settled. And you now tuning into crystal would feel only the beneficial habit imprint, which then you can mirror into your own body. Same thing could be done without the external crystal, but just utilizing our own internal crystalline structure. We have plenty of chemicals inside us that form crystals, and without us necessarily literally forming them, we can tune in to a higher frequency body of who we are, which is on the next like frequency level, if you go 7, 8, 9, so when you get to the 9th frequency level, it is crystalline. It's essentially, we have a imprint of the crystalline structures within us. So you can utilize an external crystal, or you can do the same thing with the changing of a habit, utilizing your 9th level, your 9th body within your energy field. So in a meditation, we will connect more with the crystalline guardians itself and those beings from higher dimensions as well, which would be really interesting. But for now, I want you to understand that crystalline consciousness is actually really high frequency consciousness that is structured and well organized. And it could be utilized to transmute your negative habit into positive.